world. He knew exactly the right time to send Jesus before before the Romans. Right, there were no real roads or highways or really any security. And suddenly, at a time where the word could spread easiest, suddenly God was in the midst. Also, kind of feel though like by saying someone with good character is going to be successful, it's also kind of a cop out prediction. It's kind of like when you see that speaker who goes in front of a room full of men and says, you know, I have a feeling there's a few guys in here that are really struggling with pornography. Really? Wow. You must have done some real heavy heart searching to figure that one out. The stats speak for themselves. It's a statistical fact that these things are going to happen, that it's much more likely in a room full of men that you're going to find a bunch of men that are struggling with these things. But when we look at the most successful people in the world, and even though it is kind of a cop-out, when we do look at the most successful people in the world, I'm not going to say good character makes them successful, because you can have bad character and still be successful, but they do have one good character trait that is in common with all successful people. Because even evil needs this. They need discipline in order to be successful. See, failure is a common part of life. And for those that haven't been told that, you need to be told that. You need to be ready to fail. Hey, Ricky, you need to be ready to fail. You're not going to succeed at everything. What have you got out? Whatever. This is what he's like at Morph, too. It's funny. But see, everyone fails, right? More than once in life. And learning how to deal with failure, that's a big part of life, right? We need to figure out how to deal with things when things don't go our way. Just like a train, guess what? Sometimes in a bad situation, a train will derail. But we need to think about, and it's because there's things that are outside of our control, right? If we had full control over everything all the time, we would never let a train derail. Why? Because it's a mess. It's hazardous and people get hurt. But the thing is that there's things that come into our lives, much like a train that derails. There's things that come into our life that are outside of our control, and they kind of derail our plans. They derail our lives. And then, of course, failure happens. And people fail for a great many reasons, right? Just like a train, it can cause some pretty major trauma when failure happens. Not all failure. Sometimes it's just, oh, okay, well, now I'll do this. But sometimes it can be pretty hard. But there's one key factor that allows people to overcome failure and allows them to get their life back on track, and that's discipline. You need to have discipline. So again, in a matter of interest, I want you guys to understand what I'm talking about when I talk about discipline. I don't want to just say discipline and then there be some confusion. I'm not talking about smacking your kids. What I'm talking about is discipline is a practice of training people or yourself to obey rules or a code of behavior. Right, so when we talk about discipline, we're not talking about negative reinforcement or even positive reinforcement. What we're talking about is using a method of instruction to teach people to follow the rules. Now, what are the rules? Is that's predetermined by a great many things. For example, if you live in Canada, we have Canadian law. You, as a Canadian, you need to obey the law, right? And part of what we were taught, part of the discipline is, you don't steal, you don't kill people, you don't, commit fraud. These are things that that as Canadians we are held to, and it's a code that we live by. But as Christians, we also have another code. If you want to look at a great example of discipline and following a really rigorous rule of code of behavior, think of things like the military, right? Soldiers have a very strict code of behavior. And consequences to match. Why? Because they need to have that uniformity. They need to have all the kinks worked out. Everyone needs to be on the same page, because when someone says, I need you to do this, you need to be able to do it without question, because someone's life could be on the line if you sit there and question it. The purpose of that being is they all work off of the same code, which allows them to have a greater chance of success. They have success because they cooperate. They all have the same structure, the belief structure, right? They all believe that, I follow the chain of command, and I do these things. And the reason they do them is to achieve success. And then just like our faith, we need to believe the same things. We need to work together. And we need to make sure that we work well together. Because that is when we're going to have the greatest chance of success. If we want our church to grow and flourish and become this this jewel of Kindersley where people will come and they'll find and meet Jesus, then we need to work together. And in order to work together, we need to have a common code. And that's what Christianity is, right? That's why we have the Bible. See, Friedrich Nietzsche knew, I'm not sure if any of you ever heard of this guy, but Friedrich Nietzsche, he was the guy back in the 1800s, he lived in Soviet Russia, and he declared, he's most famous for declaring God dead, right? His most famous thing is saying, you know, God is dead. But here's the thing, and I've mentioned this before, he didn't just say God is dead. What he realized is that this was deeply, deeply disturbing when the Soviet Union became an atheist state and they removed religion. Because what they did is they said, look, we have this common belief system, right? And even Muslims have this. Whether it's right or not, they still have it. They have this common core belief system, which allows them all to kind of follow along the same path. We all believe the same thing, so we all work in the same way, right? And as Christians, we're always trying to build on this relationship to get closer to God. We understand that it's a trial and it's a relationship, and it's never perfect, it's kind of messy, but we work at it. And what Friedrich Nietzsche realized when he announced the death of God was that by removing God from the equation, by removing religion from the equation, what you actually did is you removed the whole foundation of society. And what he predicted is what we're starting to see today is this crazy shift of power that goes back and forth between two extremes instead of the small wave that we used to get before. There was always a shift in power, but it was much slower, much less radical before, because at least we were all believing in the same system. But when you have different philosophies and different ways of believing in an atheist state, then you have a massive shift that brings you all across. He understood that it wasn't faith that caused war, but instead that it was faith that allowed harmony. Faith allowed us to work together. A common belief system allowed us to bring harmony into chaos. Because let's face it, people that declare war on behalf of faith, they're really in it for power. Like you can say whatever you want, but I mean, when you have a pacifist leader like Jesus, who sat there, you know, he never fought back. He could have fought back, never fought back. He was a pacifist. How can you say that then we need to go kill a whole bunch of people? It's just messed up. Another thing to understand is discipline. About discipline is we need to practice it with an ICE, not ISE. So we're not setting up a firm. We're going to do it. See, discipline is not something that comes naturally either, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't call it discipline. We'd just call it human nature. But instead, we call it discipline because we actually have to try and counter our nature, right? Discipline is completely unnatural, but it allows us to work together to achieve something greater than ourselves. In James 2, verse 14, this is what James has to say. He says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such a faith save them? Now, James didn't call it discipline, right? He didn't say, you need to have discipline or else you don't have anything. But what he's explaining here about your faith has to have deeds or else it's dead, that is a matter of discipline. At the end of the day, you can't just say, I believe this thing, and then not do anything about it, because then you're not actually putting any discipline in your life. You're not actually forcing yourself to counter your nature, which is, I want to be selfish, I need to take care of me, I want to do this. Instead, having faith, having a faith in God and loving others and being there for others, that is completely unnatural, and that is something that we do not do very well. And James says, if you say you believe something, but you're not actually acting on it, if you're not putting that discipline in your life, then it's worthless. For example, if you believe that you need to lose some weight, and you see some value in it, and it would be good for you, but you refuse to change your lifestyle to one that would be healthier, then you are in possession of a dead belief. What use is it to you? Who cares if you believe it if you're not willing to do anything about it? See, discipline requires that you do something about it. If you have a goal in your life, let's say it's to, you know, we'll go back to lose weight, then you really need to work at it. If it's to set up a small business, then you need to go out and do it. You can't just have these dreams and not do anything. Otherwise, it's worthless. But see, discipline is hard. And when we apply it to our lives, we add it to our character arsenal, though, which becomes, you know, that it becomes this tool in our life that allows us to become whatever we want. But in order to get better at it, we need to do it. In order to become better at discipline, we need to do it. See, change is only possible through discipline. Otherwise, we are just slaves to our sinful nature, and we do what our base desires tell us all the time. This leads me to my second point, which is this. Discipline is reserved for love. So in Proverbs 3, 11 to 12, when I did my overview, I mentioned this passage. It says, "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline. Do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those that he loves, as a father the son he delights in." See, we need to embrace discipline, right? Even though sometimes it can be painful or can cause pain. Because discipline is only brought upon us when someone cares about us. I really, really care about my daughter, right? I love Claire with all my heart. And as a result, I'm going to discipline her, and I'm going to tell her when she's doing something wrong, right? I'm going to correct her behavior. I'm going to try and get her to follow this code of belief that I have. Why? Because I don't want her to get mixed up. I want to make sure that I set her path right. It's not that I'm a sadist and I have some sort of sick enjoyment out of causing her pain. It's a matter of I want to make sure she has the best chance at life. And in order to do that, I'm going to make sure I set her path as straight as possible through discipline in order to have her tooled up and ready to deal with the real world when she has to go out and deal with it on her own. This is also why we discipline ourselves and why God disciplines us. It's not a matter of, you know, giving each other pain or causing each other heartache. It's a matter of let's equip each other. Let's tool each other up. But much like steering a big ship, when you needed to change course, it can be slow and it can be, you know, you hear the groaning as it's trying to shift and go in a different direction. And that kind of happens with us. You know, we try and shift and go in a different direction, and a lot of us do a lot of groaning. But back to the losing weight example, we can choose to lose weight or gain it, right? Some people need to gain weight. Because we understand that we need to live a healthy lifestyle. Why? Because we love ourselves. We love our kids, and we also want to be able to give them our best. I know that since I became a father, it's been something that I've been much more aware of. It, you know, I started to think about my health, my own health a lot more because I realized, look, I want to be able to give my best to Claire. I want to be able to give the best to my kids that I can. I want to live longer for my daughter and for my wife. But I can't do that if I don't use discipline. Another great advantage to discipline is that it helps us hold the rest of our character together. When we read about the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians, they put it like this in Galatians 5. 22-23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such thing there is no law. See, all of these attributes, they're fruits of the Spirit. And we don't grow them, by the way. Sometimes people, you know, that's part of... One thing I've had explained to me is that all analogies walk on three legs, right? The whole point is that no analogy can be perfect, because if it was, we'd have no need for the analogy. We would just tell them what the thing is. But we use analogies to try and help us understand things. And the idea of fruit, right? Oftentimes the tree will grow the fruit. And so we oftentimes think that, oh, well, if this is fruit of the Spirit in my life, then I must be this tree that's growing this stuff. Well, no, actually, it's not. You're not growing it. The fruit of the Spirit is evidence that we have allowed the Holy Spirit to come into our life. And the last fruit that's mentioned is self-control or discipline. Are we disciplined in ourselves? Are you able to keep yourself from following more base instincts? Do you live above board? Do you need, or we need self-control if we're going to adhere to any code of behavior? Right? Even if we don't feel like it, right? For example, a great example of this is not to steal, right? And I like this example because a lot of people would agree, yeah? You know, you shouldn't steal. It's a bad thing, right? Taking something that doesn't belong to you, it's a bad thing. Until it's something small, say cutlery from a restaurant or towels from a hotel. See, inside we tell ourselves that we deserve it. That I deserve that. That's mine. Or we tell ourselves that, well, you know, they're terrible, terrible people. This is a terrible company, a terrible corporation. You know what? They don't deserve it, so I'm going to take it from them because they don't need to have it. Right? All this is, by the way, is just justifying our own theft, just so you know. At the end of the day, it's still theft. But, and here's the thing. We all have been there. We all feel like that. In fact, anyone that's ever talked to me about banks knows that I feel all banks are crooks, okay? Because they have the audacity to charge me a fee to give them money. So it costs me money to give them money. What's up with that? That's the biggest scam of all time. However, I'm not going to go out and rob a bank because I think they're crooks. However, but there is, you know, there's people here, and you know, all of us have had these thoughts where we think something like, or you'll think something like, oh, well, I've never felt this way, you know, I would never be upset with a bank, or I would never take something that didn't belong to me. I've never thought like that. Let me tell you, if you're thinking that right now, I have one word for you, liar. See, at one point or time, in one way or another, we've all felt that. We've all been there. Whether or not you act upon it is completely different. But we've all had those thoughts. We've all been there and done those things. In fact, we've all had to deal with people that we felt didn't deserve what they have. In fact, a majority of Canada is in that boat right now. If you look at the approval ratings of Justin Trudeau, clearly a majority of the country is not happy with the way that he does things. But at the same time, no one's going to go lead a military coup against him because he was elected. He won it fairly. And this is why discipline is so important. See, discipline allows us to get along with those that we really don't want to get along with, right? Because, you know, there's certain people in our lives, and we bring them close, right? We bring them into our inner circle, and we love them, and we cherish them. And they're the people we really get along with really, really well. And then there are other people. And we have them in this church. People that you don't get along with as well, or at all. But the fact of the matter is that that's why we use discipline. See, deep down, we have this inbuilt response to conflict. And whether you believe it or not, eventually conflict will break out between you and someone else in this church. And you will have this response kind of triggered inside of you. It's called the fight or flight response. Now, I'm not saying you're going to, you know, reach out and deck someone in the face. I'm saying you're going to feel this response inside you. You know, you either get pumped up and jacked with adrenaline and you're ready to go to war, or you're, you know, suddenly feeling real yellow and you want to get out of there as quick as possible because you don't want to have to deal with this. It's going to happen at one point or another. But the thing is that discipline is a characteristic that allows us to overcome this desire, right? And we employ this all the time, right? We have rules about assault in our country. You're not allowed to just go around punching people. Why? Because we made a rule about that, because, you know, things aren't very productive if we run around punching people in the face. I don't like you, I don't like what you said, I'm going to punch you. That does not work. So instead we practice discipline, and it's interesting how really we practice discipline in certain things almost unconsciously. Why? Because our parents raised us up, set us on this path and said, look, you just don't do these things. And of course, we've, you know, And it allows us to do some amazing things, right? When we're not just running around and being slaves to our sinful nature and just knocking out our neighbor's teeth all the time. It allows us instead to grow. It allows us to build cities and empires and countries. It's allowed for industries to grow. It's allowed for us to advance in technology, all because we all adhered to a specific group of rules. We disciplined ourselves enough to say, I may not like you, but we can help each other in order to grow. It also allows us to live as comfortably as we do here in North America, where we don't have to worry when we travel from coast to coast, right? Any other stretch of highway in a lot of the world, like you think about trying to travel that kind of distance in Africa, you probably aren't going to make it. You're going to get robbed or killed. But because we cooperate through a set of rules and regulations, and we discipline ourselves to obey them and follow it, we can have the comfort that we have. In the Old Testament, they called this code the law, right? And we read about it all the time. You know, we got to follow the law. What they're talking about is the book. Right? They're talking about Pentateuch more specifically, the first five books of the Bible. And it's the law of Moses, right? And what the law was meant to be was God revealing Himself to His people. He's saying, "Look, if you want to follow Me, if you want to be My people, this is who I am." And He showed them. And He said, this is how you need to be. It wasn't a matter of do this or else. It was a matter of, if you are going to be My people, then this is what you need to be, because you need to reflect who I am. However, as with both Canada and Canadian law and with the Old Testament, in both cases, there's... they give us reason to live together, to have peace and harmony, and it allows us to prosper because we have an agreed upon set of principles that will allow us to remain safe. Even if we disagree, it allows us to have some sort of fairness in our lives. And having discipline in our lives allows people to see the code that we live by, right? People understand that you're Canadian when you go to different parts of the world because of the way that you conduct yourself, right? Because we have a set code, we have a set way of thinking. It's kind of bound more into our culture than anything. It changes how we think, how we speak, how we treat people. This is that code that we're talking about, and the code that I want to mention is what I'm going to call the Creed of Christ. I bring it up because today of all days we see a breakdown of discipline every single year. And I kind of made a joke, a little bit of a jest at it earlier on, where I said, you know, tomorrow is going to be the day when all those New Year's resolutions are broken. And for most people, it's true. It's hard for us to say, look, I want to make this change and then go out and do it. Instead, oftentimes we're full of dead belief that we've just grudged up in ourselves. So my challenge for you this week is we're going to put discipline to work. Because when we put discipline to work, then suddenly you're going to start have results come pouring in. And so Richard will know what this is. Hey, can I actually get you to give me a hand here, Richard? I'm going to give everyone here an envelope. And inside this envelope is a piece of paper, blank. I want you guys to do something this year. We're on January 1st, 2017. First off, I want you to take the envelope, and on the outside, on the front, I want you to write your name. Right? So put down Christine LeDrew. By the way, if you didn't know, these are my in-laws, Christine and Derek LeDrew. You haven't introduced yourself. We have a small crowd this morning, so I just figured you probably did. So I want you to write your name on the outside of the envelope. And then I want you to take some time, either today, whether you do it before you leave or you do it after you go home, but I want you to take this piece of paper and I want you to write a letter to yourself. You're going to write a letter and you're going to outline exactly what you want to accomplish in 2017. You're going to make some goals for yourself. You're going to set goals in your life. And Then what I want you to do is I want you to take that piece of paper, put it back in the envelope, and don't worry, these are peel and seal, so you don't even got to lick it. You just got to peel it, seal it. And then, if you take it home today, I want you to bring it back to me. I'm going to hold on to them. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to send these back to you next year in 2018. And I want you guys to take a look at it and see, did you have enough discipline? Did you use discipline in your life to allow yourself to grow? Did you allow discipline in your life to allow you to accomplish your goals? Did you actually bring any change into your life? This is really going to be, it's really going to kind of shine a light onto whether or not you really take character seriously. And here's the thing, and it's what I told, we've done this before with the junior highs, and I'll tell them the same as you. This is only as serious as you take it right now. Right? So if you take it serious and you write down an actual list of goals and stuff like that, and then suddenly you get this letter, you know what, it's really cool because you get this a year later and you get to actually see what happened. But if you're like some other kids who just drew a picture of a hamster and put it in there, then guess what? A year from now, you're getting a hamster. And not even a good-looking one. But here's the thing, right? Maybe it's do something like try a Bible in a year program. Maybe it's making daily prayer a part of your routine. You know, I want to pray every day at this time, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it's volunteering at a charity or signing up to volunteer here at the church. Either way, I want you to pick something out today. I want you to start something. And I want you to write it down. Because this is going to be a way to hold you accountable, right? When you get this letter back, it's no one else ragging on you. It's no one else harping on you. It's you saying to yourself, this is what I wanted to do. And it'll be you reading it yourself going, man, I either did do it, hurrah, or I didn't. So that the next year, I also hope that if you feel comfortable enough, you'll come and talk to me about what it is that you chose to do. And then I'll be there to encourage you. I hope you share it with your friends and your loved ones because they'll be there to encourage you and help you to achieve your goal, right? Discipline is reserved for those who love you. I want you guys to be able to see the growth that is brought into your life through discipline. And I think that this is just a very practical way to see it done. You know, make sure you take some time, you pray about it, you think about it. But other than that, that's my big challenge for you today. I want you to actually fill this out. I want you to try and take it as seriously as you can. And just bring that letter back to me as soon as you're done. And it'll keep sealed. I won't look at it unless you tell I won't look at it at all. You'll have to tell me as much as you want to tell me. I'll just keep it locked away in my cabinet. And then a year from now, I'll make sure I send them out to you. So let's all stand this morning and we'll just pray before we end the service. Dear God, thank you so much that you're with us. God, that you are helping us, you're encouraging us, you're loving us. God, that you would just strengthen up our discipline today, God. Lord, that you would just continue to discipline us, to help us to live by your word, God, that we would just have our path set before us, God, and that, Lord, you would help keep us from careening off the rails, Lord. Lord, that you would just surround us with people and loved ones, Lord, that will encourage us and keep us on track, Lord God. Lord, that we would be able to show the world exactly who we are through how we live and how disciplined our lives are for you, God. Holy Spirit, that you would be with every person right now as they go to write their letter, and God, that they would really take some time to talk to you about it. God, that you would speak to them and you would just impress on them some real goals of what they need to accomplish for this year. God, I thank you, Lord, for everything that you're doing here. And Lord, for all that you're going to bring to us in 2017. I am just so grateful and so excited to see and be a part of what's going to happen here at New Life Community Church. And thank you for all this, Jesus. And in your name I pray.